Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I can hear a collective rumbling in America.
I've lost my house. You've lost your house.
Call it protest music for a new generation. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. With the Iraq War and terrorism in the news, protest songs have been making a comeback of sorts. In a moment, we'll speak with Steve Earle, whose recent albums were packed with anti-war statements. But joining us first on the phone is writer Chris Dahlin. In a recent article for Pitchfork Media, he argues that many musicians mirror our turbulent times, but instead of opting for big, slogan-filled anthems like Give Peace a Chance or What's Going On, many seem to prefer subtle, enigmatic tunes like this one by The Books. As a result, their messages maybe getting through. Chris Dahlin is on the line from New Hampshire. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, good to be here.
So why do you think ambiguity is the order of the day for artists who want to at least, you know, dip a toe into the political pool?
Well, it seems like, and my thinking about this came from a stock question that I usually ask bands, which is, you know, why don't you write more political songs, or do you think people should be writing more political songs? Because the counterculture, what we would call that, has always sort of taken the lead on that. We always remember the 60s, the Summer of Love, and opposing the Vietnam War. And in these times, I always ask about that, and people seem to think it's kind of naive, in a way, to get too factual, or else they're intimidated about the details, or they feel they don't read the newspaper enough, or if they've got a six-month lag time until their next album, that it's just, you know, they could write something about immigration reform, and then it would be out of date. So I don't think they really found a way to tackle the issues in the context of what they're doing. But at the same time, you see people kind of experimenting with moods and experimenting with ways of sort of saying, you know, can we come together here? Can we change the way we're feeling? Or can we tap into the anxiety that's out there? And, those kind of vaguer approaches, which aren't really overt protest music, are starting to seep into indie rock and electronica and the things that you know, we cover at Pitchfork.
Well, the art critic Michael Kimmelman has said that he doesn't think that very often political art is not good precisely because it lacks ambiguity, and that ambiguity is a hallmark of great art. Do you see that at play in the musicians that you deal with?
Yeah, I mean, I think that high art argument always factors in. You might find a classical piece that was inspired by, you know, someone becoming emperor or something like that, but it's always kind of a footnote to your experience of the music and the quality of the composition.
But that's an interesting point, that musical history, art history, is full of exceptions to Kimmelman's rule. Let me bring singer-songwriter Steve Earle into the conversation. Steve, you've written some very sharply pointed political songs.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Ambiguity does not seem to be your stock in trade.
Well, it's not, you know, when I don't wish to be ambiguous. I mean, it's one of those things that I came up in an era where we never questioned for 1 minute that, you know, or even a nanosecond, that an artist's job was to observe what was going on around them and comment on our society. That's what artists do. Now, not everyone that makes pop records is an artist. And I mean, it's art, but it's not. I think there's a point in an artist's life where you make a decision. You know, if we want to talk about high art, I'm not sure I know what that is. I'm from Texas, but I don't, there is a decision that artists make to make art for the sake of art. And I'm not sure I care what Britney Spears thinks about the war in Iraq, but I'm not Britney Spears. And I think that what's important about the last few years is we've lived through a period of time when no blacklist was necessary, no censorship was necessary, because basically by sitting around and worrying about record sales and worrying about a lot of other factors, which are things, I'm supporting half the women in Tennessee. I do worry about record sales to a certain extent. But, you know, there is a point at which you have to make certain decisions that you're going to say certain things. Some of my music's like that's about issues is really straight ahead and hits the nail right on the head. That still will reach some people that just saying it without a melody won't. And so it's therefore worth doing. I don't claim to be able to reach everybody. I can't make a universal statement making art. But I do consider myself to be an artist, and I think I can probably You know, I can make that argument for myself.
Steve Earle's here with us in the studio. Chris Dahlin, who writes for Pitchfork Media, is with us on the phone. Chris, taking a look at a couple of indie rock acts, TV on the Radio, their album Return to Cookie Mountain, you know, a very post 9/11 mood, but nothing that you could really kind of put your finger on and say, there, right there, that's the politics. What about something like Sufjan Stevens and his record Illinois? Is that a similar kind of thing?
Yeah, and I've kind of wrestled with that because, you know, in trying to understand his music, and I've had the chance to interview him once, and, you know, he's writing about America, and in the 20s you'd have people like John Dos Passos writing, you know, the USA trilogy, trying to understand what is America. And I think that's part of what he's doing, but the messages that are in there are kind of ambiguous. I don't know that there's as clear an agenda, and maybe that's our duty to interpret that, or maybe it's his duty to be a little more clear, but... you know, this sort of idea of, like, what would a singer-songwriter today say about the country and where we're going? And some of his themes are very heroic or very community-oriented, like, here's a parade, let's get in this together, let's make the country better.
But right, well, really... here, I mean, one of the lyrics in The Tallest Man, The Broadest Shoulder is, you know, what have we become, America? Soldiers on the great frontier, carpenter and soldier, one-on-one, it's the battle, volunteer. I mean...
But volunteer for what?
Exactly. You know, yeah. It's full of ambiguity.
And I don't want him to say, you know, volunteer for, you know, ending the war in Iraq necessarily. But, you know, point it a little more, like, what are... I like a lot of indie rock bands that kind of get that feeling of community, however vague it is. And I think TV on the Radio is very effective at that. But it's almost like they shy away from steering people anywhere. And maybe they just get too bogged down in the details, or they don't want to get bogged down in the details. But that direction is missing, that kind of, we're the counterculture, we have nothing to lose, we don't need to sell 5 million records, and so let's send a message.
However ambiguous that message may be, see what you make of this Sufjan Stevens song. Sufjan Stevens from his album Illinois, spelled with an S-E at the end. The song is The Tallest Man, The Broadest Shoulder, and that's an example of music that, as Chris Dahlin of Pitchfork Media was telling us, has a message. It may be kind of difficult to pin Sufjan Stevens down on what exactly that message is. Chris is with us on the phone. Steve Earle is here with us in the studio. He's performing at Town Hall tonight, marking the release of his new album, Washington Square Serenade. And after I introduced you a few moments ago, Steve, as someone who's done some very politically pointed albums,
right,
this one seems to be a step back, in a
sense.
Yeah,
it's a more personal record. I mean, I don't think I'm capable of making an apolitical record. I mean, Copperhead Road was a pretty political record. It was just my contribution to a whole lot of post-Vietnam art that was being made because, and there were movies. We finally started talking about it. It took us 10 years to talk about the Vietnam War. And, you know, we that grew up in it, you know, the people that went to fight it, the people that stayed home and opposed it. And I don't remember that war not being on television. So it's part of who I am.
So why the change then with this new recording?
I just needed, you know, to be, it's not a change. It's just the next record. And it took me a little longer to make this one because I changed records record labels, but it was a big change in my life. I got married, and I got married sober. I've been married before, and lots have been made of that, but I've never been married sober before.
Hence the reference to all the women in Tennessee earlier.
Exactly. And my life's changed. I moved to New York City, and I moved here partially because of for political reasons, desperately needing to be able to, after 32 years in Tennessee, being able to walk out my front door and see a mixed race same sex couple holding hands, because it makes me feel safer at this point in my life. And if I have a heart attack or a stroke someday, where do I want to get my wings clipped? Fairview, Tennessee, or New York City? I felt like I had to start thinking about those things.
All right, but let's go back to the 2004 album, The Revolution Starts Now.
Right.
There is no ambiguity in the message that you're delivering. I mean, you could parse that Sufjan Stevens song all day, and figure out what it means.
That's true, but I think it's important to look at the difference between one songwriter and another songwriter, or any kind of writer or any kind of artist, and the way that writer is equipped to communicate. There are artists in this world who do not, communicate readily in political terms and do not communicate readily in literal terms. They should, and it's just as wrong to fault them for not, communicating mm-hmm. in a more direct manner than they're capable of as artists, and in a manner that's outside of their voices and ours, as it is to expect, me to shut up, because I'm not going to. It's just not going to happen.
I'll just mention for Sufjan that I feel like he's maybe even still figuring out where to draw that line with his work. I think he's not a political artist overtly, and I think the fact that he said, I'm making albums about all 50 states, and I think everyone just latched onto that right when he became very, very popular very quickly, and that can run away with you. So
it can, and here's a question. Turn the tables on you. Do you think I'm a political artist?
Oh, I definitely do.
Yeah. Well, I don't. I think, I don't, and I'm not, I understand why you do. And for a moment, for a couple of records, I've been maybe the most political songwriter around at this moment in time, but I'm basically a songwriter. I think the main difference is what I do just naturally as a writer is more akin to prose and to journalism than it is to poetry. I have to struggle for stuff like we just heard. I have to struggle to – I knew Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark, two really great songwriters when I was growing up. They wrote completely differently. Guy was – I learned this, to tell stories with a melody, but it's still basically like writing prose. You develop it that way with the beginning and the middle and the end, whereas Townes was able to communicate in more – more poetic terms, so that he got compared to Bob Dylan. He got compared to other more poetic, more naturally ambiguous writers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's always the struggle. And Phil Oakes, was so great.
Exactly.
At that. He started as, Bob Dylan telling him, you're not an artist, you're a journalist. And that was something that he struggled with his whole life.
Yeah. And yet some of those songs have transcended pure journalism and
Absolutely. Continue
to be
exactly
heard
and in Phil Oakes' defense, that was in my opinion a really unfair thing of Bob Dylan to say.
I agree.
He said it when he was a really, really young man, and John Reed was an artist, and if he had realized his power as an artist and kind of held to that vision maybe a little better than he did, rather than becoming a politician, I think the world might be a different place. I mean, it's we as artists, that's what we were put here to do, and it's up to us to try to communicate the best we can with the tools that we're given.
All right, well, Steve Earle was given a guitar and a voice, and let's hear a little bit of your communicating from the 2004 record, The Revolution Starts Now. This is called Rich Man's War.
There ain't nobody higher right here since all the jobs I'm down in Mexico. Reckon that learning silver trade made me see the world. Moved to the city someday, married a black-haired girl. Somebody somewhere had another plan. Now he's got a rifle in his hand, rolling in a bag and wondering how he got this far. Just another poor boy off to fight a rich man's war.
hide behind a pretty young wife and a baby girl. A stack of overdue bills and went off to save the world. It's been a year now, he's still here, chasing ghosts and thin dry air. We went back at home to find his company, took his car.
The song is Rich Man's War from Steve Earle and the 2004 album The Revolution Starts Now. Steve Earle has a new album, which we'll talk more about in a little bit. He's with us in the studio. Chris Dahlin from Pitchfork Media with us on the phone. Chris, there's, as we were talking about before, there's nothing ambiguous in the message there, you know, just another poor man off to fight a rich man's war. But sometimes you do run the risk of getting a little too literate, not literate, too literal, too preachy when you're writing a protest song. And you have uncovered a couple of ill-conceived attempts at writing political songs. Tell us about a couple of them.
Do you mean the Cassette Boy one?
Well, there's Cassette Boy and there's Bright Eyes.
The Bright Eyes, I think, and I don't want to be too unfair to him, there's a YouTube clip of him playing When the President Talks to God, and he says the day he wrote it. And I think it kind of epitomizes what people shy away from. There's a taboo about being too literal and about being too obvious in protest songs. And I think they don't want to sound like that song. They don't want to sound like, oh, my God, and you have to resort to, like, naming the president, and these images are awful, and you're just sitting here slagging them. And it's not a very artful piece. And, I'd say that sums up what people are trying to avoid.
Well, let's hear just a little bit of this Bright Eyes song. It's called When the President Talks to God.
When the president talks to God, are the conversations brief or long? Does he ask to rape our women's rights and send poor farm kids off to die? Does God suggest an oil hike when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, are the consonants all hard or soft? Is he resolute all down the line? Is every issue black or white? Does what God say ever change his mind when the president talks to God?
All right, Chris, Steve Earle was talking before about how you don't want to hear Sufjan Stevens trying to sound like someone he's not. Do you think this is a case of Bright Eyes trying to sound like someone that he, Conor Oberst, is not?
I wouldn't say that, because he takes a lot of chances in his songs, and he's written some really bold and really personal lyrics. And so I don't want to be seeming like I'm condemning that song or saying, oh, he shouldn't have written that. I think it's a really interesting addition to his catalog, but it's a little, as they would say, on the nose.
Mm.
And there's a serious problem there, which is, you know, that people are worried that the president seems to get messages from God, and there are a lot of issues around that. But
it scares the hell out of me.
Way to deal with that.
So what do we need here? I mean, do you need to reach a critical mass of artists who are willing to actually take a stand, however, you know, couched in imagery and metaphor the message might be? Do you need a groundswell of this sort of thing for this sort of songwriting to gain traction in the indie rock world?
I'd like to see that. I'd like to see people coalesce a little more. Maybe the problem is that, you know, indie rock is so broken apart and fragmented, and everyone complains about the state of the industry, and everyone's just listening to their own iPods. But it would be great to see more of a movement around that, to see music as a tool to kind of motivate people to talk about these things and come together against some of these issues. I mean, you think of the frustrations in the country right now with the Iraq war, just for starters. It would be nice if music... I think people expect music to lead the way to dealing with that. I think television has kind of taken that role and really run with it, and kind of left music in the dust and things like The Wire and satire like The Daily Show. But I just think music is more emotional, and it connects with people and motivates people in a much more emotional way. So I'd really like
it's also art you can consume while you're driving your car, which has always made it really powerful. I think that's one reason we had a whole generation grow up with music maybe being more important than in all the other forms of media combined.
Well, that's we'll talk a bit more with Steve Earle about music and specifically about his new music, a new record called Washington Square Serenade, in a moment. Chris Dahlin is a freelance writer who covers business, technology, and pop culture for Paste Magazine and the Onion AV Club and is on the staff at Pitchfork Media. He's been with us on the line. Chris, thanks very much for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
All right, and in a moment, we'll, as I say, speak more with Steve Earle. And tonight on WNYC, tune in to hear about political music of a very different kind. A Place for Us is a special show hosted by Scott Simon, looking at the 50th anniversary of West Side Story. That's tonight at 8 here at 93.9 FM.
Mark my lovers and styles of clothes, things that you have told yourself are true, lost or changing as the days come down to you.